segregated eyes.
Blog Talk Radio.
There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying. Oh, when it's time to turn the head to life, the greatest gift of all. Pretending day by day that the moment somewhere will soon make a change. We are a part of God's great big family, and the truth, you know, love is all we need.
There's a choice we're making. We're saving our own lives. It's true, we make a better day. Just you and me.
I knew you were talking to me.
And so we all, we must lend a helping hand.
We are the world. We are the children. We are the ones to make a brighter day. So let's start giving.
We are the ones who make a better day. So let's start giving.
right there in the Delta, right in Mississippi, Lexington, Yazoo City, all over Mississippi, mass murder, all over Louisiana and Alabama and Arkansas, murder of blacks. I know y'all don't hear it, just can't wipe it out. So you saying, Bishop, what happened with the hurricane? I told you a month ago it's coming back. It's nothing on its way. They would never clean up and get what they get done before nothing hit. Why? You ask the question, what is happening? Because the curse has never been cleaned up. What curse? The curse of the mass murder of Native Americans and blacks. When they brought blacks from Africa, I'll tell you that. When they brought them from Africa on the boat, they dropped them all in Florida. They dropped them all in South Carolina and North Carolina. Bought them on the block, chocolate block in Richmond, Virginia. Say you buy 500 blacks just come from the ship. They had to walk from Florida to Mississippi, from North Carolina, South Carolina, to Louisiana, to Arkansas, to Texas. Because they were buying slaves. Because the slaves was making the money. The slaves in Mississippi was picking cotton. The slaves in Louisiana were doing sugar cane. And the same thing happened over in Jamaica, sugar cane. In Mississippi, in Louisiana, sugar cane. In Virginia, they had tobacco. So tobacco, cotton, and sugarcane was sold all over the world. People was coming in and getting it out of the back of the slaves. I'm going to tell the truth tonight. So the ancestors, which is our great-great-grandfather and grandmother, never didn't get paid. So reparations in line for us. You know, what I'm saying tonight, well, you might have a clear picture of what happened in Florida. Now, after they didn't put them in jail, they killed them. The Teddy Lane. Okay. Now, when they did that, rich people and people had money influence started moving from the north, going to Florida. They want to go to Florida. Everybody wants to go to Florida. They want to live close to the water. Okay. And that's what happened. Now, then they have an incident in Florida where lots of blacks was killed because a white woman said a black man raped her, which was a lie. They killed hundreds of blacks. And then that didn't get killed. They was in the swamp. Snakes and everything got them. So this was the blood of Florida. And right now, the Florida is racist towards black folks right now. That's one of the things that's going on. Even the governor right now is racist. And he takes them people and send them somewhere else. You know, the same way down in Texas, that governor is racist. When Dr. King said Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, Texas, and Florida, he's telling the truth. He didn't tell you the deep part of what's happening. And you say, well, I want to move to Florida. Now, when rich folks got to Florida, the hurricane came. What happened? One man said, I see my Rolls Royce go down the river. I see my Bentley go down the river. I seen my Mercedes go down the river. And I seen my house, my mansion that I built by the ocean, tore down. There's 100 people they done got already. They done found, but it's more than 100. Because last month, Mary, I prophesied, Jerry, that it would be a flood. It would be a hurricane back to back. As the people in Florida got to leave Florida and come them that ride it out, some of them dead. You can't ride God out. You have to obey God. And then when you talk about I lost the house, you can lose your life because all the silver, all the gold belongs to God. So, like Dr. King said in his speech tonight, how can you say you love God and you let people starve and you put people in prison? You take what belongs to somebody else. See, the God of the wind, the God of the water, the God of the universe, giving up the truth of what's going on. And if you caught up in it, see, if you caught up in it, you're going to get caught up. When I was in New Orleans and Latrina came, the man was saying for 2 weeks, y'all got to leave because hurricane coming. Nobody leave. I came out while we was in a revival down in New Orleans. And I got up early that morning, do my little running. I didn't see no bird. I didn't hear no bird singing going on. I didn't see no bird. I didn't see nothing. I went back to the church. I said, y'all better get on up out of here because something happened. All the animals gone. The buzzards. Everything gone. Ain't nothing here. I think the rats went in here. Because they know they could feel it coming. So I got up and left and come to Chicago. Last I heard, this is a kingdom in here. What I'm telling you tonight, God have a way of warning you if you listen. Now, I'm going to prophesy this. You can write it down. It's going to be over 100 people they're going to find. That's they're going to ride it out. You got to give up the car, the home, everything, the land. I'm not leaving here. It ain't your land. The land was stolen. It was stolen from the ancestors. It was stolen from the Native America. Black America, right now, Chicago, Detroit. Who built this? The Native American built it. Black folks built it. But we can't even get reparations. They can send money all over the world. Okay, y'all ain't listening to me. This is what's going on now. You said, Bishop, what does that mean to me? It means that God wants you to know the truth will set you free. Okay? And what I'm saying tonight, this is the Dr. King movement. Dr. King was worried about feeding the hungry, getting jobs. Dr. King was concerned about this racism which America have here. You know, black folks being killed and selling assault weapons to the children and kids getting killed in the school and can't nobody do nothing about it. Trillions of dollars being spent by the Rifle Association and these crooked politicians would not say, hey, we don't want no more assault weapons. One group is suing the gun dealers. And everybody, listen to me carefully. If I don't care what, if you live in the United States and one of your loved members got killed by a gun, begin to sue the gun owner. Not the one that said, the fact that if Smith and Wesson made it, you sue them. If enough suit come on them, they will stop letting all these guns. Look, there's so many guns out here. Kids 12 and 13 with guns. The girl that told me of 10 years old got shot, and the boy 12 got killed. They trying to sell dope at the young age, right there in Monroe. See, all this kind of stuff is going on in these little towns because ain't nobody checking them, okay? So if you don't say nothing, they ain't going to say nothing. The Bible said the way to sin is death, the gift of God eternal life. You got to check the children and let them know this ain't the way. Robbing and stealing ain't the way. You can't do what your master did. He robbed, steal, and killed. And that's where we at now. Been robbed, killed, raped, and left in the street for dead. That's why the God of the storm, God of the flood, the God of the tornado, the God of the earthquake, is cleaning up the earth because it's so filthy. And when I said filthy, filthy is so much evil is done. When you walk the earth, so much of murder been going on. People over in Kenya starving to death. People over in the India, they flooding out. An earthquake in Italy. Earth, how are you? God is a way cleaning up this earth. That means, Dr. King, I don't understand why we can't be together as sisters and brothers. And Putin is killing innocent people. Hitler killed 6 million Jews. Putin playing out the same book that Hitler playing out mass murder. And the world got to say something. Putin got to come to a stop. And the only way he can stop it, the world had to come against Hitler. Hitler had killed 6 million Jews. What's wrong with in America? See what's going on in Ukraine. What's wrong with the blacks in America is not doing nothing about South Africa, where black folks are starving and the little children is dying. Ain't nobody said, let's get together and send $1 million, send $1 trillion over to South Africa. You let boundaries stop it. You let racism and stop it because of color. Wake up, Dr. King. Malcolm was trying to wake you up. Marcus Garvey, Sojourner Truth. Marcus, they're trying to wake you up to wake up in America. Mississippi, Arkansas, all the time you wake up. Stop the killing, save the baby. Stop the hate and bring love into the scenario. Once you bring love, things change. I want to thank them that come to my revival last week. We had a 4-day revival. And that revival business. So I thank those that called, those that sent donations. You know, whatever be God has planted on you to send that, plant that seed. Some of you didn't plant the seed. You can still plant it. And I can tell you all the stuff that I told them at the revival. Go to my website. That's thefeedofabrahamjoseph.com. Or you can write me, Post Office Box 28, Chicago, Illinois, 60628. Or you can go to Cash App and hit the money sign and Bishop and T3T. And you still want to send a donation. You say, I want to plant this seed because I want something to happen. I was talking to Regina. I was telling her about what was going on. You know, some of you get caught up in materialistic things. You lose your sight on God. You know, you lose your sight of what God got for you. My last sermon, Friday, what is your Saturday? What is your assignment? What time did God give you? Is it for you to mistreat women? Is it for you to rape men? Is it for you to kill? Is that the assignment? That ain't God's assignment. That's the devil's assignment. That's an evil assignment. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Reach out. I want to claim what God got for me. Moses seen the burning bush. And when Moses took his shoes off, now, let me tell you, he took his shoes off because God said the ground you stand on is holy. So if you're going to be my man or my woman, you got to go through something. Hello, somebody. What is your assignment? Is your assignment is what Malcolm went through, what Martin went through, what Paul Lanzanba, what Rosen went through, what our ancestors went through. Your assignment will be more better. So you reaching, you got your fist closed, can't nothing come in, can't nothing go out. You have to see. So someone, well, I got this little money. The government again. You let the people give me that money that died and was murdered in this country, that came over in shackles, came over, and some of them jumped overboard. How come you think that water churning? That's the ancestors saying, "I'm coming back in floods and storms." You can't sit on this coast and don't recognize God, you can't recognize that I was murdered for this land. You can't recognize I was murdered in Mississippi, in Matilla, Mecca, Evelyn, and there's many others I can talk about that was murdered in Mississippi, murdered in Arkansas, murdered all over America. The blood of the righteous is in the hand of every city in this America because of racism. And God is speaking to me and you. I know I'm right about it tonight. So I want to tell you, through the Holy Ghost and the Spirit of God and the Spirit of our ancestors, we're reaching out for what we want. So Dr. King was saying, and he was saying it, that we got two Americas, one white, one black. You can't ignore that. You can't say, well, that ain't happening. Look around you. Look what you got. Look what the other people got. Now look at the job. Look who's in power. They were saying in Greenwood, Mississippi, they said black power. But we are the white power. And look how white power is hurting us. What did black power do? Black power never been in power. So how can you, if you've never been in power, how can you be able to do some things? This is Dr. King talking about the other America. One white, one black. And you don't want to believe that, but in 2022, we're still going through the racial and white supremacy. And some of you might get money moving to Las Vegas and to Sin City. I'm gonna move down to Florida, and I'm gonna get this. You can't blend in, because if you spiritual, you know, I got to get away. Too many rich people in here. If people are stolen and robbed, and they go down to Florida. But look at Mother Nature. This is Dr. King.
Now, there are several things that I wanted to talk about before such a large, concerned, and enlightened audience. There are so many problems facing our nation and our world that one could just take off anywhere. But today I would like to talk mainly about the race problem, since I'll have to rush right out and go to New York to talk about Vietnam tomorrow, and I've been talking about it a great deal this week and weeks before that. But I'd like to use as a subject from which to speak this afternoon the other America. And I use this subject because there are literally two Americas. One America is beautiful for situation. In a sense, this America is overflowing with the milk of prosperity and the honey of opportunity. This America is the habitat of millions of people who have food and material necessities for their bodies, culture and education for their minds, freedom and human dignity for their spirits. In this America, millions of people experience every day the opportunity of having life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness in all of their dimensions. In this America, millions of young people grow up in the sunlight of opportunity. But tragically and unfortunately, there is another America. This other America has a daily ugliness about it that constantly transforms the buoyancy of hope into the fatigue of despair. In this America, millions of work-starved men walk the streets daily in search for jobs that do not exist. In this America, millions of people find themselves living in rat-infested, vermin-filled slums. In this America, people are poor by the million. They find themselves perishing on a lonely island of poverty in the midst of a vast ocean of material prosperity. In a sense, the greatest tragedy of this other America is what it does to little children. Little children in this other America are forced to grow up with clouds of inferiority forming every day in their little mental sky. As we look at this other America, we see it as an arena of blasted hopes and shattered dreams. Many people of various backgrounds live in this other America. Some are Mexican Americans, some are Puerto Ricans, some are Indians, some happen to be from other groups. Millions of them are Appalachian whites. Probably the largest group in this other America in proportion to its size and the population is the American Negro. The American Negro finds himself living in a triple ghetto, a ghetto of race, a ghetto of poverty, a ghetto is to deal with this problem, to deal with this problem of the two Americas. We are seeking to make America one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Now let me say that the struggle for civil rights, the struggle to make these two Americas one America, is much more difficult today than it was 5 or 10 years ago. For about a decade or maybe 12 years, we struggled all across the South in glorious struggle to get rid of legal, overt segregation and all of the humiliation that surrounded that system of segregation. In a sense, this was a struggle for decency. We could not go to a lunch counter in so many instances and get a hamburger or a cup of coffee. We could not make use of public accommodation. Public transportation was segregated. Often we had to sit in the back and in transportation within cities, we often had to stand over empty seats because sections were reserved for whites only. We did not have the right to vote in so many areas of the South. The struggle was to deal with these problems. Certainly, they were difficult problems. They were humiliating conditions. By the thousands, we protested these conditions. We made it clear that it was ultimately more honorable to accept jail cell experiences than to accept segregation and humiliation. 5,000 students and adults decided to sit in at segregated lunch counters to protest conditions there. When they were sitting at those lunch counters, they were in reality standing up for the best in the American dream, seeking to take the whole nation back to those great wells of democracy, which were dug deep by the founding fathers in the formulation of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. Many things were gained as a result of these years of struggle. 1964, the Civil Rights Bill came into being after the Birmingham Movement, which did a great deal to subpoena the conscience of a large segment of the nation, to appear before the judgment seat of morality on the whole question of civil rights. After the Selma movement in 1965, we were able to get a voting rights bill. All of these things represented strife. But we must see that the struggle today is much more difficult. It's more difficult today because we are struggling now for genuine equality. It's much easier to integrate a lunch counter than it is to guarantee a livable income and a good solid job. It's much easier to guarantee the right to vote than it is to guarantee the right to live in sanitary, decent housing conditions. It is much easier to integrate a public car than it is to make genuine quality integrated education a reality. So today we are struggling for something which says we demand genuine equality. Not merely a struggle against extremist behavior toward Negro. And I'm convinced that many of the very people who supported us in the struggle in the South are not willing to go all the way now. I came to see this in a very difficult and painful way in Chicago over the last year where I lived and worked. Some of the people who came quickly to march with us in Selma and Birmingham were active around Chicago. And I came to see that so many people who supported morally and even financially what we were doing in Birmingham and Selma were really outraged against the extremist behavior of Bull Connor and Jim Clark toward Negroes rather than believing in genuine equality for Negroes. And I think this is what we've got to see now, and this is what makes the struggle much more difficult. So as a result of all of this, we see many problems existing today that are growing more difficult. It's something that is often overlooked, but Negroes generally live in worse slums today than 20 or 25 years ago. In the North, schools are more segregated today than they were in 1954 when the Supreme Court's decision on desegregation was rendered. Economically, the Negro is worse off today than he was 15 and 20 years ago. So the unemployment rate among whites at one time was about the same as the unemployment rate among Negroes. But today the unemployment rate among Negroes is twice that of whites. And the average income of the Negro is today 50% less than white. As we look at these problems, we see them growing and developing every day. We see the fact that the Negro economically is facing a depression in his everyday life that is more staggering than the depression of the 30s. The unemployment rate, the nation as a whole, is about 4%. Statistics would say from the Labor Department that among Negroes it's about 8.4%. But these are the persons who are in the labor market. We still go to employment agencies to seek jobs until they can be calculated. The statistics can be gotten because they are still somehow in the labor market. But there are hundreds of thousands of Negroes who have given up. They've lost hope. They've come to feel that life is a long and desolate corridor for them with no exit sign. So they no longer go to look for a job. There are those who would estimate that these persons who are called the discouraged persons, be 6 to 7% in the Negro community. That means that unemployment among Negroes may well be 16%. among Negro youth in some of our large urban areas, it goes to 30% and 40%. So you can see what I mean when I say that in the Negro community, that is a major, tragic, and staggering depression that we face in our everyday lives. Now, the other thing that we've got to come to see now that many of us didn't see too well during the last 10 years, that is that racism is still alive in American society and much more widespread than we realize. We must see racism for what it is. It is the myth of the superior and the inferior race. It is the false and tragic notion that one particular group, one particular race is responsible for all of the progress, all of the insight, and the total flow of history. And the theory that another group or another race is totally depraved, innately impure, and innately inferior. In the final analysis, racism is evil because its ultimate logic is genocide. Hitler was a sick and tragic man who carried racism to its logical conclusion. He ended up leading a nation to the point of killing about 6 million Jews. This is the tragedy of racism because its ultimate logic is genocide. One says that I am not good enough to live next door to him. One says that I am not good enough to eat at a lunch counter, or to have a good, decent job, or to go to school with him, merely because of my race. He is saying consciously or unconsciously that I do not deserve to exist. To use the philosophical analogy here, racism is not based on some empirical generalization. It is based rather on an ontological affirmation. It is not the assertion that certain people are behind culturally or otherwise because of environmental conditions. It is the affirmation that the very being of a people is inferior. This is the great tragedy of it. I say that however unpleasant it is, we must honestly see and admit that racism is still deeply rooted all over America, still deeply rooted in the North, still deeply rooted in the South. Now, this leads me to say something about another discussion that we hear a great deal. That is the so-called white backlash. I would like to honestly say to you that the white backlash is merely a new name for an old phenomenon. Not something that just came into being because shouts of black power, or because Negroes engaged in riots and whoops, for instance. The fact is that the state of California voted a fair housing bill out of existence before anybody shouted black power or before anybody rioted in Watts. May well be the shouts of black power and riots in Watts and the Harlems and the other areas are the consequences of the white backlash rather than the cause of it. What it is necessary to see that there has never been a single solid monistic determined commitment on the part of the vast majority of white Americans. The whole question of civil rights and on the whole question of racial equality. This is something that truly impels all men of goodwill to admit. It is said on the Statue of Liberty that America is the home of exile. It doesn't take us long to realize that America has been the home of its white exiles from Europe. It has not evinced the same kind of maternal care and concern for its black exiles from Africa. It is no wonder that in one of the sorry songs, the Negro could sing out, "Sometimes I feel like a motherless child." Great estrangement. What great sense of rejection caused the people to emerge with such a metaphor as they looked over their lives. What I'm trying to get across is that our nation has constantly taken a positive step forward on the question of racial justice and racial equality. But over and over again, at the same time, it made certain backward steps. This has been the persistence of the so-called white backlash. In 1863, the Negro was freed from the bondage of physical slavery. But at the same time, the nation refused to give him land to make that freedom meaningful. At that same period, America was giving millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that America was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor that would make it possible to grow and develop. Refused to give that economic floor to its black peasant, so to speak. This is why Frederick Douglass could say that emancipation for the Negro was freedom to hunger, freedom to the winds and rains of heaven, freedom without roofs to cover their heads. He went on to say that it was freedom without bread to eat, freedom without land to cultivate, it's freedom and famine at the same time. It does not stop there. In 1875, the nation passed the Civil Rights Bill, refused to enforce it. 1964, the nation passed a weaker Civil Rights Bill. Even to this day, that bill has not been totally enforced in all of its dimensions. Nation heralded a new day of concern for the poor, the poverty-stricken, for the disadvantaged, brought into being a poverty bill. At the same time, it put such little money into the program that it was hardly and still remains hardly a good skirmish against poverty. White politicians and suburbs talk eloquently against open houses. In the same breath, they intend that they are not racist. All of this, all of these things tell us that America has been backlashing on the whole question of basic constitutional and God-given rights for Negroes and other disadvantaged groups for more than 300 years. So these conditions, persistence of widespread poverty, of slums, and of tragic conditions in schools and other areas of life. All of these things have brought about a great deal of despair, a great deal of desperation, a great deal of disappointment and even bitterness in the Negro community. Today, all of our cities confront huge problems. All of our cities are potentially powder kegs as a result of the continued existence of these conditions. Many in moments of anger, many in moments of deep bitterness, engage in riots. Let me say, as I've always said, I will always continue to say, that riots are socially destructive and self-defeating. I'm still convinced that non-violence is the most potent weapon available to oppress people in their struggle for freedom and justice. I feel that violence will only create more social problems than they will cause, that in a real sense it is impractical for the Negro to even think of mounting a violent revolution in the United States. So I will continue to condemn riots, continue to say to my brothers and sisters that This is not the way. Continue to affirm that there is another way. But at the same time, it is as necessary for me to be as vigorous in condemning the condition which calls persons to feel that they must engage in riotous activities as it is for me to condemn riots. I think America must see that riots do not develop out of thin air. Certain conditions continue to exist in our society, which must be condemned as vigorously as we condemn riots. In the final analysis, a riot is the language of the unheard. What is it that America has failed to hear? Failed to hear that the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years. Failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. They didn't fail to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. So in a real sense, our nation, some of the riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. As long as America postpones justice, we stand in the position of having these occurrences of violence and riots over and over again. Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention. Now let me go on to say that if we are to deal with all of the problems that I've talked about, if we are to bring America to the point that we have one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, there are certain things that we must do. The job ahead must be massive and positive. We must develop massive action programs all over the United States of America in order to deal with the problems that I have mentioned. Now, in order to develop these massive action programs, we've got to get rid of one or two false notions that continue to exist in our society. One is the notion that only time can solve the problem of racial injustice. I'm sure you've heard this idea. It is the notion almost that is something in the very flow of time that will miraculously cure all evil. I've heard this over and over again. There are those, and they're often sincere people, who say to Negroes and their allies in the white community that we should slow up and just be nice and patient and continue to pray, and in 100 or 200 years the problem will work itself out, because only time can solve the problem. I think that is an answer to that myth. And it is that time is neutral. It can be used either constructively or destructively. And I'm absolutely convinced that the forces of ill will in our nation, the extreme righteous in our nation, have often used time much more effectively than the forces of goodwill. It may well be that we will have to repent in this generation, not merely for the vitriolic words of the bad people and the violent actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence and indifference of the good people who sit around and say, wait on time. Somewhere we must come to see that social progress never rolls in on the wheels of inevitability. Comes through the tireless efforts and the persistent work of dedicated individuals. And without this hard work, time itself becomes an ally of the primitive forces of social stagnation. So we must help time. We must realize that the time is always right to do right. Now there's another notion that gets out. It's around everywhere. It's in the South, it's in the North, it's in California, and all over our nation. It's the notion that legislation can't solve the problem. It can't do anything in this area. Those who project this argument contend that you've got to change the heart and that you can't change the heart through legislation. Now, I would be the first one to say that there is real need for a lot of heart change in our country. And I believe in changing the heart. I preach about it. I believe in the need for conversion in many instances and regeneration, to use theological terms. And I would be the first to say that if the race problem in America is to be solved, the white person must treat the Negro right, not merely because the law says it, but because it's natural. Because it's right, because the Negro is his brother. So I realize that if we are to have a truly integrated society, men and women will have to rise to the majestic heights of being obedient to the unenforceable. But after saying this, let me say another thing which gives the other side. That is that although it may be true that morality cannot be legislated, behavior can be regulated. Even though it may be true that the law cannot change the heart, it can restrain the heart. Even though it may be true that the law cannot make a man love me, it can restrain him from lynching me. And I think that's pretty important also. So while the law may not change the hearts of men, it can and it does change the habits of men. When you begin to change the habits of men, pretty soon the attitudes will be changed. Pretty soon the hearts will be changed. I'm convinced that we still need strong civil rights legislation. There's a bill before Congress right now to have a federal open housing bill, federal law declaring discrimination in housing unconstitutional, and also a bill to make this real all over our country. Now, nobody can doubt the need for this. Nobody can doubt the need if he thinks about the fact that since 1963, some 58 Negroes and white civil rights workers have been brutally murdered in the state of Mississippi alone. Not a single person has been convicted for these dastardly crimes. There have been some indictments, but no one has been convicted. So there is a need for the whole question of the administration of justice. There is a need for fair housing laws all over our country. It is tragic indeed that Congress last year allowed this bill to die. That bill died in Congress. A bit of democracy died. A bit of our commitment to justice died. If it happens again in this session of Congress, greater degree of our commitment to democratic principles will die. I can see no more dangerous trend in our country than the constant developing of predominantly central cities ringed by white suburbs. This is only inviting total disaster. The only way this problem will be solved is by the nation taking a strong stand, by state government taking a strong stand against housing segregation and against discrimination in all of these areas. And there's another thing that I'd like to mention as I talk about the massive action program, and time will not permit me to go into specific programmatic action to any great degree. But it must be realized now that the Negro cannot solve the problem by himself. There again, there are those who always say to Negroes, why don't you do something for yourself? Why don't you lift yourself by your own bootstraps? We hear this over and over again. Now, certainly, There are many things that we must do for ourselves and that only we can do for ourselves. Certainly, we must develop within a sense of dignity and self-respect that nobody else can give us. A sense of manhood, a sense of personhood. A sense of not being ashamed of our heritage, not being ashamed of our color. It was wrong and tragic that a Negro ever allowed himself to be ashamed of the fact that he was black, or ashamed of the fact that his home and ancestral home was Africa. So there's a great deal that the Negro can do to develop self-respect. There's a great deal that the Negro must do and can do to amass political and economic power within his own community and by using his own resources. So we must do certain things for ourselves, but this must not negate the fact for the nation to overlook the fact. The Negro cannot solve the problem himself. Man was on the train maybe some weeks ago, and he came and talked to me and said, problem, Dr. King, that I see with what you all are doing is that every time I see you and other Negroes who are protesting, you aren't doing anything for yourself. He went on to tell me that he was very poor at one time and he was able to make it by doing something for himself. Why don't you teach your people, he said, to lift themselves by their own bootstraps? And then he went on to say other groups are faced with disadvantages, the Irish, the Italians, and he went down the line. I said to him that it does not help the Negro. It only deepens his frustration on feeling and sense of the people to say to him that other ethnic groups who migrated or were immigrants to this country just 100 years ago or so have gotten beyond him, and he came here some 344 years ago. I went on to remind him, Negro came to this country involuntarily in chains, while others came voluntarily. I went on to remind him that no other racial group had been a slave on American soil. On to remind him that the other problem that we have faced over the years is that the society placed a stigma on the color of the Negro, on the color of the skin, because he was black. Those were close to him that were not close to other groups. I'm to say to people that you ought to lift yourself by your own bootstraps, but it is a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. The fact is that millions of Negroes, as a result of centuries of denial and neglect, have been left bootless. They find themselves impoverished aliens in this affluent society. That is a great deal that the society can and